Radio Tatras International, from the heart of Europe to the world.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all our other listeners. It's that time of the week again, that zany look at the news postcard from Poprad. If you remember last week, Eric was spotted at the Olympics. He was running round the track. Well, this morning, he's coming over the top of the snow-capped Tatras Mountains. Somebody's reported seeing him. He's doing very well, apparently. Once round the Olympic track, then a marathon trek across France, Germany, and many other parts of the wonderful place called Europe. And there he is. And he was still carrying the Olympic torch. He was a flame. He was a light. And do you know what he was doing? He was lighting a fag, ladies and gentlemen. Lighting a fag. But he was having a go. His little legs were going like the clappers. So until he finally makes it back to the studio, there's nobody there. I was just doing an except. The wonderfully sexy Petra, who's keeping an eye on all the technical bits, and he's going to join in. Now we have another surprise for you, ladies and gentlemen. The man in the gayest city in the world, Paris, Mark Gander. How are you, me duck? Isn't there either. So it's me. Just me and Petra fiddling with me knobs in Poprad. And that's me sitting on the zit on the face of the universe in the middling Midlands, where all the middle-aged, middle-class, midlife crisis Midlands are gathered in the UK. Me. Oh, I don't know. Do you think this show's falling apart, ladies and gentlemen? No Eric. No Mark. Just me and Petra.
I think it will be the best one ever. Just me and you.
Do you think we should go off the air now?
No.
Right, anyway, let's do it. Let's do that thing called Postcard from Poprad. And that's the starting point has to be Monday the 14th of August 1967, which was a very, very special day for broadcasters. One that Eric likes to mark, and in his absence, I would like to mark it too. This month, 45 years ago in the United Kingdom, the Marine Offences Act was introduced to silence the offshore radio stations. It came into force at midnight, and only one station, Radio Caroline, defied it and continued on the air. The authorities, of course, won. But one DJ became the spokesman of a generation and almost overnight invented a new style of broadcasting, and that was Johnny Walker. He said, "No man will ever forget Monday, August the 14th, 1967. And we haven't. It was the end of something good. It was the end of pirate radio. Johnny Walker made his legendary Man's Fight for Freedom broadcast and said, prophetically as he thought at the time, that the government would one day relent and that Radio Caroline would finally sail majestically and proudly up the Thames once again. It never did come true, but he was right about one thing, that people would always remember that sad day. And at the height of the 60s, in the offshore radio boom in 1966, there'd been 10 stations broadcasting from off the British coast. Now there are none. If you want to find out about what actually happened and you can hear Johnny Walker's broadcast, go to the Offshore Radio Memories page on Facebook. I'm not telling you who owns it, but it's not a big step to guess. It's really worth listening to. It's really good. And while we're talking about radio stations, let's say hello to Talk Radio X and Replay Radio and all the others who broadcast Postcard from Poprad across the world. Let's say thank you to them and wish them all the best on this magical day to do with the drama of radio. Now, I think it's time to get on with the show, and let's start first in somewhere very, very serious, a very serious point. Let's just wish the UK's Prince Philip all the best and hope that he gets better pretty quickly. He was in hospital again last night after suffering a repeat of the bladder infection that struck him during the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations of a while ago. As we all probably know, he's 91 years old, and it looks like he's going to have to spend a few days in Aberdeen Royal Infirmary after being taken there from Balmoral Castle. It means it's the third time in 8 months that the Duke of Edinburgh has been admitted to hospital with various ailments. But give him his due, he's always back there, he's always doing his bit, he's always with the Queen, and he's a good egg at 91 years old. Let's all wish him a swift recovery. And what about Prince Harry, while we're on about the royal family? It isn't Prince Harry, actually, ladies and gentlemen. It's Prince William. I thought you were there to stop me making mistakes, Petra.
I like when you make mistakes. It makes me look good then.
Anyway, we're back. Prince William and his helicopter crew saved a teenager from drowning yesterday. That's cool, isn't it? The 15-year-old girl got into difficulties after going to help a 13-year-old sister off the sea in Anglesey, which is where Prince William's based. Anyway, they flew out in their big helicopter and they sorted it out. Good on you. That's another good thing for the royal family. The royal family have really, really appear to have regained all the ground they lost over the past few years. In the last couple of years, they really have made inroads into becoming something spectacular and romantic and charming. Once again, the Queen seems to have lost that austerity. Prince Philip still got that gruffness, but manages a smile and a joke. And Prince Harry and Prince William, they've both become royal heroes. I think that's brilliant. Here's something that's been going on in the UK this week, too. It's been A-level week. That's when all the kids go wild as they hope to get A's and B's in their exams. I don't know if you have it in other parts of the world. I don't suppose you do. You must have something similar. What do you have? Do you have exams over there, Petra? Like A-levels and O-levels?
No. We don't have such exams. We have like end of the school year exams in June, and then when you finish in college, we have what we would call it leaving exam. It's similar to A levels, but we don't take so many subjects. It's usually about four only.
Oh right, so English people are sort of beleaguered by how many subjects they've got to take compared to the rest of Europe.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Do you have the gradations in the qualifications you can reach? Like, you know, the best one you can A is like an A plus or something like that. Then you have a B plus or a B, a C, and you go all the way down to E. Do you do that sort of thing there?
No, we have numbers 1 to 5. 1 is like A, and 5 is FX.
If you get 5, does that mean you're a bit like
Didn't pass?
You didn't pass. Oh, you didn't pass.
No, 5 is no pass.
Oh, right. See, in England, even failure in Britain is seen as a pass.
No. Education. Here you have to repeat the exams or repeat the whole school year.
All right. Now, if you get an E, there's what we'll say. This story's going round the UK at the moment, and it says very simply, what's the difference between a nightclub bouncer and an English university? Well, the answer's dead simple. A nightclub bouncer won't let you in if you've only got a few E's. Petra.
Yes.
You are not Eric. You have to laugh at my jokes.
But I didn't find it funny. English jokes are not funny.
Right then. I think this is war. Right, anyway. Now, we shall ignore Petra for the rest of the show. I will do it by myself with nobody to help. I am just a lonely boy.
I'm going to jump in anyway. You want it or you don't.
What do I want?
Well, you want me in the show or you don't want me in the show? I don't care. I will be in the show.
You will be in the show.
I will be. I am.
Oh, no, because you've got the on-off switch.
I am the star of this week's show.
Well, you probably are, actually, on my performance. Well, let's move on. Let's start doing Real Gone Kids, that wonderful, wonderful, serious aspect of the show, which everybody hangs on their fingertips to hear. Let's start with Elton John. Sir Elton John's long-time bass player has been found dead in Los Angeles. Very sad. We shouldn't take the mickey, and we're not. Robert Wayne Birch was discovered on Wednesday after an apparent suicide gunshot to the head. He was 56 years old. That's terrible, isn't it? And he's found in his San Fernando home about 1 o'clock in the morning. And the police, County Assistant Coroner Chief Ed Winter, is saying that it's being investigated as a possible suicide. Birch wasn't only a guitarist, he was a saxophone player, and he worked as the bass player in Elton John's band in the early 90s. And most famously, he was one of the superstars on Candle in the Wind. Do you know that song?
I do, surprisingly.
I just wonder if that was that a hit in Slovakia, like it was over here? I suppose it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was all over the world.
I do, yeah. I'm just wondering if it got, like Slovakia at the time there, wasn't as well known as it is now. I'm just wondering if it got out there. I assume it must have done.
It did.
Good. Anyway, he played with other famous musicians, including Billy Joel, Tina Turner, Eric Clapton, and Stevie Wonder. See, what makes me wonder about this story is why they decided it's suicide. There isn't a suicide note.
And what is it?
There was nothing. There was no apparent signs of drug use linked to his death. There was no suicide note. So why has the coroner decided that it's suicide?
Interesting.
Anyway, moving on to the next Real Gone Kid. This is a real tragedy. I bet it's only a real tragedy in Britain, but I bet in America people will be affected by this. The Dandy, the comic book for children, the bespoke comic book with Desperate Dan and people like that, he's now dead too. Have you ever heard of it, Petra?
No.
Haven't you?
I'm not the comic reader, so...
Anya?
No.
Do you have comics in Slovakia?
We do, but I'm not the one who reads them.
What are they called? Name me two.
What?
Comics in Slovakia.
Donald Duck.
Dawn of the Dark?
No. Duck Donald.
Duck Donald. Donald Duck.
Well, I don't know. I know my kids read some, but I have no idea what they are.
I'll tell you what. If Donald the Duck is known in Slovakia as Dark Donald, I tell you what, that's brilliant. Slovakia wins hands down again. No, the Dandy is like a comic book. It's just a magazine of comic strip characters. And they're all fabulous, like Desperate Dan, Nasher, and the Bash Street Kids and things like that. I assume they were all in that one. Although they might have been in the Beano, which was a similar thing. But they were in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. They were really popular with kids. Every kid read comic books, and the Dandy was one of the best. And DC Thompson have said, they're the publishers of it, said the printing would end with a special edition released on the comic's 75th anniversary on December the 4th. They're based in Dundee. And they admit that this will be the end of the Dandy in its present form. But they're not revealing what they're going to do. They've got what are classed as exciting plans. What sort of exciting plans could you have to replace something that's so intrinsically 1950s England? Are they going to start making videos of it?
They might do.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Who would watch it?
Well, I read a lot of people agree. I like it. Like, me and Eric have a lot of rows about the fact that I like books and he doesn't. That's because he's a Philistine and because I'm clever.
It's right? Only because he can't read, that's all.
I know.
He just won't admit it.
But the Dandy, see, it was beautiful. It was just something. It was almost like a newspaper for kids. And you'd sit there and read it, and while your dad was reading the News of the World, you would be sitting there reading the Dandy. And it was really good. And if they then turned it into a video or something like that, I'm not sure it would work. I'm not sure it would really move it on into the present age. Maybe the humour's wrong. Maybe everything else is wrong with it. Anyway, that's what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. It's the 75th anniversary of the Dandy, and it's dead. Now, here we got a really, 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 really bad Real Gone Kids. I make no comment on this. I just present it to the world as it's been presented to me. Jeremy Clarkson, that incredible presenter of whatever that program's called, Top Gear, has done it again. And it's all because his beloved dog has died. I think that's terrible when your dog dies. That's terrible. And Mr. Clarkson's got very upset about it. And he's unleashed this tirade of abuse on Britain generally because of some messages that were put on Twitter about his dead dog, his Labrador. But when you think about it, Jeremy, I've had dogs that have died. I didn't go and tweet about them. I didn't do an RIP page on Facebook for my dead dog. I just got him, I grieved for my dog, give him a pat, buried him in the garden. That's
yeah,
what
but
you
maybe,
do. With...
Maybe he had nobody to talk to about it, so he wanted to share it. It's the way of relieving your grief.
It could be, but in fact, when you think about it, I know exactly what you're saying, but if you think about the way Twitter has been abused over the past few months particularly, and when you think about Jeremy Clarkson as the personality he is, would he really have been sensible to think, I'm not going to get any abuse on this, I'm going to get a load of sympathy? Or maybe because the death of your dog, as horrendous as it is for you, isn't a world-shattering event in most people's lives. And Jeremy Clarkson went and put it on Twitter. I'm not sure that what he said was right. I don't think it's fair that he should accuse people of attacking him. He's known for making irreverent jokes. And what happened to him on Twitter was that people made irreverent jokes about his black Labrador. Is that really wrong? What do you think, Petra?
I suppose if you share it on Twitter, then you have to be prepared either for positive or negative replies to it, and you can't get angry.
Well, that's it. That's it. But also, on the other hand, I look at it this way, that really, if Twitter is this social thing that is supposed to be so grand and show the better side of humanity and of life and of the way people react, then in a way, Jeremy should have been able to put his dead dog on there. But it's what his response has been. I think this response is incredible. And ladies and gentlemen, I make no bones about reading it out to you. I'm not defending it. These are not the views of RTIFM or of me or of any of my distant colleagues. But this is what one of the most powerful men in British entertainment has to say about his own country because somebody said something nasty to him on Twitter about his dead dog. Jeremy said, Britain is a nation of 62 million complete and utter B, loads of dashes in the middle, uds. We are the country that invented the concentration camp and international slavery.
No reply from me to this. That's sad.
And he says, and who was it that sent the white Russians home to be slaughtered by Stalin? Yes, it was us. All right, Jeremy, I can understand you're upset about your dog. And I don't think Britain is my favourite country in the world either. But I think that's a bit strong. Might be true, but it's still a bit strong.
I agree.
Now, the next thing that is still taking up the nation, Eric and I defend BBC local radio on a regular basis. We've got a Facebook page, we've got a campaign going, and we want to save local radio. But in the midst of it, I try and temper it by my views on BBC local radio. And my views on BBC local radio are as simple as this, yet again. play some proper songs, don't talk rubbish, and for God's sake, give up on the Olympics now. Right then, we'll leave Jeremy with his grief and with his machinations about the paucity of Britain. Quite startling stuff. I wonder what's going to happen to him over that. Let's move on to the Olympics. Now, you know that Eric and I defend the BBC local radio programmes to the hilt. So I temper it sometimes with the idea that maybe they should do a bit better with these programmes, like, i.e. stop playing Daniel O'Donnell and that other bloke with a bald head who looks like a monkey and plays drums. And start playing good music and start doing interesting subjects. And I would say to the BBC locals, we think you're wonderful, but why are you still talking about the Olympics? Why are you still interviewing a shopkeeper off the corner of your road who went to the Olympics to see the bobsleigh or whatever? Why do you think people are interested? Take a lead from Postcard from Poprad, because this is an interesting Olympic story. The EU has claimed it's topped the Olympic medal table. It has, the EU says that it has taken more medals in the Olympics than anybody else in the world. Guess who doesn't appear on the list? Britain.
Why, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Do you know why? Do you know why they've done it? Do you know why we don't appear, Petra?
No.
Because Europe has decided to lump all the medals taken by European countries together and claim them as European medals. And that has put Europe at the top of the list. Well, I don't know how I feel about Europe. I don't think I really want to go into it at this particular moment in time. But it was British athletes who got those gold medals. It was British athletes who got the bronze medals and the silver medal. It was British athletes who worked and worked and worked for years to get to the situation where they could actually take on the world in athletics. And what right has the European Union got to steal their glory so they can massage figures to make themselves appear to be great? You're not great. Not if you're going to nick our figures. Was that a bit of a rant, Petra? Sorry.
I'm just laughing here.
Don't you laugh?
You got so excited about it. It's really nice. That's what you be. I think this is called proud British person.
Well, it's not being a proud British person particularly. What it's actually being is being somebody who has a fair mind. If Europe wanted to claim the Olympic medal for posterity, why didn't they actually say, here, lads, why don't we set up a completely pan-European team and send them to the Olympics and see how we get on winning medals then? Instead of, oh, we'll just nip round Europe and nick all the medals off people, say, we got them. Get lost.
Okay. That could be a long discussion, but let's move on.
So, ladies and gentlemen, she's telling me to move on. I love being bullied by women. Anyway, this is a serious one, a really serious one. And I just think, again, that he points a finger at Britain very much like Jeremy Clarkson did. But it is pretty, pretty, pretty shameful. There was a car crash on a motorway a few days ago in Britain. And people who can only be described as ghouls were actually stopping the cars and photographing this poor woman. She was 21, age 21, and she was fighting for her life trapped inside the van that she'd been travelling in. And she was there for 4.5 hours. And people were pulling up with the cameras and with the phones and taking pictures of her. And then they were going to put them on YouTube and various sites and things like that. Well, first of all, what the police did, and I'm not a great defender of the police in the way they're generally within the world. They have a very good job to do, and they do it very well in places, but they can also be a bit heavy-handed. And what the police did here, they started to photograph the ghouls. And they took 80 photographs of people who had actually slowed down to take pictures of the wreckage where this woman was trapped. And they've posted those. They've also written to the people telling them that they were breaking the law and that by taking photographs they could risk prosecution. Now, first of all, not only do I think it's absolutely shameful that these people were actually doing that, were taking these photographs, had nothing, had no compassion or caring for the woman who was trapped in there, or indeed a family or anybody else, but it also has a wider aspect to me, and I'd just like to throw it open to the listeners, and to Petra, and to Eric, and to Mark, if they bothered to turn up, right? More than anything, the fact that people think that they can stop on a road by the side of an accident and take photographs of it and post them on the internet is a complete consequence of citizen journalism. People think that taking pictures or films of people in these kind of situations is legitimate. And yet what they don't realize is that the legitimate press wouldn't necessarily do it. These are the people that, who attack the press for intrusion. And yet they stop by somebody who is in dire straits, who is potentially on to reaching the end of their life through no fault of their own, and they actually start to record it. Then they go on the net and call themselves citizen journalism. Journalists, proper journalists, real McCoy journalists, do go into war zones and do record people in terrible, terrible situations. But if you think about a car crash is a car crash. And if somebody is trapped in that car, then they need freeing. They don't need to be exposed to the world. And the press will cover that event if it's necessary at some stage in the future. Very rarely would you find a pressman there by the side of that wreckage trying to make something out of it. There has to be something quite dramatic happening to make them interested. And really, in a way, I rest my case. And we're now going to go to the break and move on to part two in a few seconds. Go and have a shake.
Radio Tatras International gets on your wavelength. www.rti.fm.